Good morning and welcome to True Talk. This is your host, Samar Jarrah. I am live at the studio and soon we're going to be taking your phone calls. We're going to be talking with a journalist with Middle East Eye. He covers U.S. foreign policy, elections, and Arab American communities. His name is Ali Harb. I think I interviewed him a while ago. It was about Lebanon, but this time he was in Washington, D.C., during the events of January 6th. So stay tuned. Listen to this lovely music. This is Dalida. She was born in Alexandria, Egypt, and she is of Italian descent. And this is True Talk on WMNF 88.5 FM. Welcome back to True Talk. You were listening to a beautiful sound of Dalida, who is originally Italian, but she grew up in Alexandria, Egypt. And she's singing actually in Arabic. Like she lived, I think, until she was 18 or 20, went to Italy and France and Europe, came back when she was in her 50s and started singing in Arabic. Good morning and welcome to True Talk. My co-host Ahmed is in the studio with me.
Good morning.
Good morning, Ahmed. Good to see you. It's been a while since you and I were in the studio.
Why are we avoiding each other? Because of the COVID?
Yes, because as I keep saying, and I don't like to keep repeating myself, but because my husband operates on people with COVID and I feel like I am a moving, ticking COVID spreader.
Are you scared at home?
Yeah. To be honest with you, he is usually the day before, he's like worried. And he says because, you know, it's no matter what precautions you take, you still have, you know, danger level. So when he comes home, he makes sure he takes off his clothes and takes a shower and, you know.
Does he wear scrubs?
Of course. They wear, oh, when he comes home, yes, scrubs. And but it's brand new scrubs that he wears.
Mm-hmm.
And the coat, the white coat. But the white coat, I think, I'm not sure if it's a new one every time or what. It's difficult.
Well, even over the white coat, if they're just doing surgery, they wear these...
oh, yeah, of course.
They don't wear... gowns and things. Well, Samar, the vaccine is being distributed and he's in healthcare. Has he been vaccinated?
Yeah, he's due next week for his second.
Okay. No, you're not broadcasting it like they are broadcasting Biden taking his shots.
No, but...
Because Biden took his first shot, in front of the media, and the second one.
I told my husband, take a picture. He says, Samar, are you ridiculous? Why would I do something like that? I said, just to encourage my friends and family and followers to take it.
Yeah.
Now he's nagging me to take it. Not that I can, because luckily I'm less than 65.
Oh, so you have
so
to
I'm
be
happy
over,
that I
You
I
have to be over 65 to take it?
Unless you have some...
But aren't you... I think family members of medical staff that are exposed should also...
Not at the moment.
Now, I saw the other day, and by the way, on today's show, Samar, we're going to be speaking...
Yeah, Ali is, I think, listening to our...
We're going to be speaking about the Capitol attack, the rioter, or the insurrection, or whatever you want, the attack on democracy... by what they are calling now rioters. I mean, they keep changing the name, but they kind of settled on rioters.
Well, ask Ali,
Some people called them terrorists at some point. Some people, and we talked about that last week, why some people objected. In fact, even some Muslims are objecting to calling them terrorists because
Me too.
It can be used against Muslims in the future. But
we can
we're going to be talking about the rioting, but first I want to just mention a couple of things. One just slipped my mind for some reason, but the other thing is that the New York Jets just hired the first Muslim NFL coach in American history.
Are
or
you
history.
Serious?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
His name is Robert Saleh. He's from Dearborn, Michigan, and there's all these stories about where he came from this famous predominantly Middle Eastern Muslim high school in Dearborn called Fordsum High School.
What's his origin?
I don't know. I think he's Palestinian or Lebanese. But he's one of the most successful defensive coordinators, defensive head coach for the 49ers. He had, the second best... defense in the NFL, took them to the Super Bowl, and then last year they had the fifth best defense. But now he's just been signed up as the first head coach of the New York Giants. But the New York Giants have a record of two. They only won two games this last season, so he's got his work cut out for him.
Yeah.
So some people are celebrating that, saying, well... And, I think it's also something to celebrate because the thing is, most Americans, view us as somehow other. They still view Muslims and Arab and other, as somehow not American.
Not only other, but other that does not have fun or does not play music sports.
At minimum, it's the other. Now, and then that's the starting point. And then just go down from there.
Yeah.
All the bad things. Oppressed, narrow-minded, not educated, conservative. Women oppressed, and then, of course, you get down to the lowest terrorist.
Yeah, but you can't be a musician and an actor, actress.
Because they don't see Muslims doing other things, or an athlete. Well, I guess you do see Muhammad Ali, and there's a lot of athletes. Muhammad Salah now, Mo Saleh from
Egypt.
From Egypt, okay, that plays
Ali
international sports.
Ali has been waiting on the air.
Yeah, you're so eager to bring Ali on.
Because the guy is on the air listening.
Oh, he's on the air right now?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay,
and
we'll
Ali is
Ali
busy. Ali Harb is a journalist at Middle East Eye, and he's covering the U.S. foreign policy. Good morning, Ali.
Good morning, Samar. Good morning, Ahmad. Let me start out by saying shout out to Robert Saleh from my hometown of Dearborn.
Wallah, where is he originally from?
Lebanese. But there's a lot of pride in the community. Everybody's talking about it.
Everybody's talking about it. And okay. I'm talking about it. I'm not even from Dearborn, and Ali agrees.
Yeah, there were talks that he would take up the job at the Detroit Lions, and I'm an immigrant. I don't watch or understand football. I don't care if that puts me in the other category, but I'm excited about it.
Very good.
I'm excited about it because of the idea that, you know, it's part of just being American. You know, it's an all-American sport, and
Ali, maybe
there's some buzzing sound in my ear.
Ali,
I don't know why.
Yeah, Ali, what are you using? Let me try to call you again.
Sure.
Because there is a lot of buzzing coming.
Okay, before you do that, can you lower the phone line? When you lower it, it disappears. So it must be the phone line. Let's try them again.
Okay.
Option would also be on Skype.
I'll try to call you again, Ali.
Thank you.
Okay, Ahmed.
It must be those Dearborn lines
they're being watched.
They're all tapped. That is some heavy surveillance happening there or something. How many people are listening to those phone lines out of Dearborn?
God, let me try.
Now, Dearborn, Michigan, which is, in the Detroit suburbs, is basically Arab and Muslim central. In America, it's like it's the most densely populated or has the highest ratio of Middle Easterners and Muslims and Arabs. By the way, in English we say Arabs, but in Arabic we say Arab.
Okay, is it where Rashida Tlaib from?
Yeah, she's also from that area. And so people joke that, you know, the FBI or the NSA has a field, I'm sure they have a field office there, but they have a huge headquarters where they monitor activities. Speaking of the FBI, they actually just issued and notified local mosques and synagogues, including the mosques in Tampa, Summer, of potential attacks on mosques.
Seriously?
This week, yes. They're saying...
On Friday, you mean?
Not on Friday. They're just saying in general, between now and in the next couple of weeks, around the inauguration and after what happened on the Capitol, houses of worship for Muslims and Jews are potential targets. And they are asking mosques and synagogues to review their security protocols and to increase security, especially at entry points.
So how would, for instance, local mosques increase?
They have more people from their volunteers or security team or hire off-duty police officers to be at the entrance.
Okay.
Because, you know...
So people were going to come from the entrance?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's most people will come in from the entrance and you just have to have more people that are there. So this bulletin is going out. In fact, the local mosques have already received it and now they're communicating this and they're supposed to have...
Interesting.
Meetings about that. So local synagogues and mosques, be on the lookout, and they're asking them to review security protocols. So this thing, you know, it's all of a sudden, I mean, we knew this stuff was happening, and the FBI knew about this. And in fact, they say that they issued a bulletin on the eve of the attack on the Capitol that this was, that they're going to wage war. And how somehow law enforcement ignored all of these things. It's almost like, of course, not compared to 9/11, but they knew 9/11 was about to happen. You know, George Bush received that memo from Condoleezza Rice a month before, like in August, saying that Al-Qaeda is determined to use airplanes to attack the United States. And they didn't really do anything about it. So it's almost, these law enforcement agencies again, they put so much scrutiny on the Muslim community, and then real threats, happen.
Ali Harb is a journalist at Middle East Eye. Good morning, Ali.
Good morning, Samar. Is this better?
Yes, better.
It's much better. Ali, I wanted to ask you, were you covering the events on January 6th?
Yes, unfortunately, I was. I thought I was going to cover a Trump protest at Freedom Plaza by the White House, and I headed there, and everybody was heading towards the Capitol, so I followed the crowd towards the action, and from there, you know, I witnessed the chaos, the tear gas, the anger, the screaming, people coming in out of the Capitol. I never made it inside the Capitol, but I was close enough, like right by the scaffoldings and the steps.
I want to go back, Ali, to the rally itself and before Trump started speaking. How was the mood? Were people saying anything? Were you able to interview people? You look like an Arab from your picture, and I'm sure you have maybe you don't ID that says you are a journalist or with the press. Like, let's go back to the speech of the president, how people were reacting, all that event before we get into the marching part.
Mm-hmm. To be honest, I did not make it to Trump's speech itself. So when I got there, there were people gathered and starting to march. Of course, I have my press badge. I identify myself as a journalist when I speak to people. Frankly, since 2015, the first Trump rally that I went to, contrary to what you may expect, I haven't faced too much hostility because, you know, I'm visibly an Arab, have a Muslim name. It's usually more courteous and amicable. Just go up to Trump supporters, ask them what their views are, what they think. In fact, many of them often try to play down the Islamophobia and the racism as if they didn't hear it or as if they pretend he said something else or he meant something else. For example, when I was in Michigan last year in November ahead of the election, I went to a rally in Lansing and he was talking about, you know, Biden turning Michigan into a refugee camp and saying some disgusting Islamophobic stuff about Ilhan Omar. Spoke to his supporters afterwards and they're like, no, he didn't say that. I was like, okay, you didn't hear it, but he did say it. So there's maybe, I think it's like maybe a bit of a personal shame to be racist to someone to their face, but they pretend to not hear it. On that particular day, though, last Wednesday, away from the Capitol, at the rally, people were just repeating, you know, the election fraud, unfounded theories. I mean, universally so. That people voted and, you know, there were more voters than people in Pennsylvania and the Dominion machines, and they were connected to Wi-Fi. They are, like, beyond 100%. They are 1,000% convinced that Trump won that election and it was stolen from him. Mm-hmm. But this is a huge and essential prerequisite to the violence that unfolded later. Because if you are an American and you vote for Trump and you believe that your vote was stolen, you're going to be angry. I would be angry if I found out that my vote didn't count and that people voted and that, you know, dark forces stole the election from me. So as I went with the marchers towards the Capitol, the closer I would get to the Capitol, the more intense the anger. And then whereas at every Trump rally, you see sort of the MAGA hats, the sparkly Trump flags, the, you know, sort of kind of like Halloween costumes, mm-hmm. American flags, people in like head to toe American flags. The closer I got to the Capitol, I started seeing people in military fatigues and bulletproof vests and military helmets.
Were you worried or scared? Were you worried?
I wasn't. You know, in hindsight, maybe I should have been. At the moment, I'm just sort of doing my job, you know, I'm talking mm-hmm. to people. And I spotted an Iranian monarchy flag. And so like, I waded through the crowd to speak to those people because Middle East Eye is Middle East focused. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're trying to find a Middle East angle, you know. So we're talking about pre-revolution Iranian monarchy flag that's used by various opposition groups. And I spotted an Israeli flag that was really close to the scaffolding. So I also waited through the crowd to get there. But once I got there, that's when the insanity was happening. Tear gas, you hear like pop sounds, which I wasn't sure if they were shots or tear gas. And then, you know, people just screaming, move forward. People screaming, revolution. Mm. People coming out of the Capitol, you know, saying that the Congress members are evacuating and they've taken over the Capitol, and the Congress members are all traitors. And you wouldn't think you'd hear at a Trump rally anti-McConnell or anti-Pence slogans. People screaming that Pence is a traitor and that McConnell is a traitor. It was just
surreal.
A surreal scene. But believe it or not, in the moment, I wasn't processing how dangerous the situation is. It wasn't maybe until the next day that I was like, wow, oh. I could have been here there.
Okay, if you're just joining us, this is True Talk on WMNF 88.5 FM. My co-host Ahmed and I, Samar, are in the studio and we're talking to Ali Harb, who is a journalist with Middle East Eye, covering U.S. foreign policy, elections, and Arab American communities. And he was in Washington, D.C. During the January 6th. When did you leave or when did you feel like, okay, this is going to be over and I have to go back and process? And I really want to know, what kind of pieces did you file? How did you explain this to your mainly Arab and Middle Eastern readers?
So I think the moment that had me, I need to get out of here, they brought like a massive American flag, talking about a gigantic American flag, and I found myself under it in the middle of the crowd.
Oh my gosh.
And that's when I got a bit claustrophobic, and I was thinking about COVID. I mean, I had two masks on, but you still, that's when I thought I need to go. So I made my way out of that chaotic scene as the western end of the Capitol. I went around the eastern end, and that's when, you know, were more crowds and more people going all the way up the steps, but they had not breached the defenses of the Capitol. So they were, like, right at the gates just protesting. And then I get a text message that there's a curfew, and in the crowd I had no cell phone service, but then I start getting the messages that at least one person got killed inside, and, wow. And you know, but then I had to go back and interview people about this. What do you think of the fact that somebody got killed? It wasn't until maybe sunset or thereabouts that I left, that I went back to my home office to write up what's happening. I mean, we're Middle East focused, but I would say that most of our readers are non-Middle Eastern, people who have an interest in the Middle East. But a lot of our readers are not in the United States. We're based in London.
Mm-hmm. Were you able to gauge their, like, even those in London or from friends and family? And, you know, you're on Twitter and social media, so I'm sure you interact and people would ask you, because, like, they ask me endlessly what's going on in America and if it's the end of the country and if it's going to be a civil war and all that. I'm sure you get the same type of questions.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, the day of, the overwhelming majority of the messages I got were, are you okay? And I think, believe it or not, people from outside were more aware of the severity of the situation than me, because I was in the middle of it.
Okay.
And then, you know, there are the questions, what's going on? Is America going to recover from this? Is this, you know, is it, what would you call it? Are they terrorists? Is this a coup? Is this a riot? So there are a lot of question marks. Unfortunately, I think we know the least the answers to these questions, being so close to the center of the action, and we're going to have to just wait and see.
Wow. If you're just joining us, this is True Talk on WMNF 88.5 FM, and we're talking to Ali Harb, and my co-host, Ahmed, is going to be talking now. Yalla, Ahmed.
Welcome to our show, Ali. So the Washington Post is reporting, saying that lawmakers are, and even law enforcement is claiming that some of these protesters or rioters actually intended to kidnap and kill lawmakers. Did you read that?
I did, yeah.
I mean, do you think that that's true? Is that the feeling that you got there? Or were some of these, rioters or people that are pro-Trump maybe had embedded in them some of these type of individuals that had other intentions.
Mm-hmm. I think the overwhelming majority of the crowd, including the people who breached the Capitol, did not know what the heck they were doing. They were just angry and taking out their anger somewhere. And I think a lot of people from the crowd itself were kind of surprised with the ease with which they were able to storm the Capitol, right? I mean, this is,
right.
We live in a highly securitized country, and this is, you would think it would be the most heavily guarded or one of the most heavily guarded buildings in the world.
Especially on that day.
Especially on that day. Especially they were expecting, yes, turmoil. But even let's say they were not aware of all the Facebook and Twitter posts that were publicly aired for plans to storm the Capitol. On a normal day, they should be able to handle a crowd of a few thousand.
Right, right. I mean, I've been to the Capitol like you, and on different times, and you can't, like,
but
you know,
there
anytime.
Isn't extreme security, Ahmed. I mean, they
no, but still, like, no, they're very visible, and they're far off, and there's perimeters. If you start seeing people coming, and, you know, you can't even step. Like, if you go on some of these steps too high, they tell you come down. Okay. Yeah, go ahead, Ali. Yeah, on a normal day, you would expect it to be difficult to get in.
Yeah, let alone there had been, I mean, when the D.C. police chief says there was no intelligence pointing that they were going to do this, it's kind of laughable. Because, I mean, there are public Twitter posts, not like you don't need intelligence officers or informants or spyware to see those posts.
No.
You can go to Twitter and
just watch the news.
Exactly. Search Storm the Capitol and put the dates before the 6th day from the 1st to the 5th. And you will get hundreds of posts by Trump supporters saying they will do this. But to answer your question originally, I think the vast majority of people were sort of angry and didn't know what they were doing, and they just followed the crowd. But I wouldn't rule out that there were very nefarious elements and very dangerous people who had, I mean, deadly and terroristic plans.
Wow.
The amount of people I saw with military helmets and military fatigues and GoPro cameras, if you're going to a protest, why are you dressed like that?
Unless you're coming for war.
Exactly.
Ali, go ahead. Continue.
So what I was going to say is that we need to know who these individuals are, and law enforcement should focus on these people more than, you know, you'll excuse my language, the sort of not so smart people who were just following the crowd and happened to get into the Capitol.
Like some of the grandmas that were just there. And but, you know, I knew something was wrong, like something was coming.
When?
I mean, I already knew. I talked about this even the week after Trump refused to concede. And I said that, you know, our constitution or our for presidential elections, it hinges on the sitting president to concede. If they don't concede, it's very difficult. It sets up a very difficult situation because there's no, like, national referee that decides who won or lost.
Mm-hmm.
And the closer we got to, you know, the further we got away from the election, all these things kept brewing.
Yeah.
Even my Uber driver was talking about, like, it was just crazy.
Everybody.
And then, of course, all the leadership, the fact that none of the Senate and none of the House would actually acknowledge Biden. So all these people were actually part of this, that were fueling this from early on. But then, like, a week before storming the Capitol, one of the accounts that I somehow, for some reason, I ended up following on Instagram is called The Truth About Cancer. And these are, like, kind of cancer truthers that are just saying, you know, they're against chemotherapy, they're against, you know, like, medical treatment of cancer. They're using more like organic and other natural, you know. They posted about, hey, we're going to the Capitol on January 6th. I'm like, what do these people have to do with the Capitol? Or, join us for the rally to defend our democracy. And that's how they were pitching it. Now, of course, I went back afterwards and all these images on Facebook have been removed. And you know, granted, this is like something that's dealing with cancer, has nothing to do with democracy or politics or elections, but these types of people have, I guess, a big following. So when those people are even going to the Capitol to stand with Trump and, you know, stand up against, they're not all the same. All these people that were there, for some reason, they have some sort of grievances, and I knew something was going down. So even if these guys, so it doesn't take a lot of intelligence to know that these people are going to come. And the whole, what are they going to do on January 6th except stop the certification? Count. Because if you stop that or delay it, it somehow denies Biden being able to get inaugurated. Mm-hmm. And all their intention, I felt, I don't know if you felt the same way, Ali, but was to throw, like, to contest the election results to the point that it can be thrown to the U.S. House of Representatives for a vote. Because that's what the Constitution says. If it's a contested mm-hmm. election, at some point what they can do is just throw out all the other results and then go to the House only that votes for the president. And in that, it's only 50 votes and every state gets one vote. So California is equal to, you know.
You spoke about that 600 million times before.
Today's listeners may not have heard that before. Okay.
But Pence preempted all that and said, I'm not going
to... That's why they went to storm the Capitol. Had Pence, and two things would have happened.
You think so, Ali? I know, just let's...
Had Pence said yes, they probably would not have stormed.
What do you think, Ali? Were they going to storm?
I think Ahmad's onto something, but I think Ahmad has given him a bit too much credit.
Oh, really? Okay.
The overwhelming majority of the people, I spoke to probably 20 people, extensively interviewed them, sort of are not as politically astute and aware of the constitutional remedies and the processes. They just know that Trump won. And they are confident, sort of, there's like an unshakable confidence that Trump will serve a second term. They don't know how.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they're just sort of following the crowd. You know, go in the, you know, people yeah. are marching on the Capitol. They're marching behind them. Maybe the goal of the sort of worst elements of that crowd was to force postponing the certification mm-hmm. or to do something to harm lawmakers that would throw the country into turmoil, that would postpone the election, the certification and inauguration of President-elect Biden. But I also sense that for, I would say, maybe 95% of them, there was no end game. There was no blueprint of, okay, we're going to do this, and then what?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the point that the 95% of those people that were there are just the sheep. You know, they believe strongly somehow it's going to happen, but they're not the architects. The architects are people like Giuliani, Trump's kids, that just needed these extra bodies to intimidate, you know. I think Giuliani probably, if anyone needs to be investigated, it's, you know, this is his type of plan that he's been putting together. I actually, you know, I heard rumors or there may be even recordings, I don't know if they're legit or not, but of Giuliani himself calling senators after the Capitol was stormed. And they now know that they're going to reconvene at 8 or 9 o'clock at night. And he's mm-hmm. calling senators and telling them, all we need you to do is just slow down the process for one more day.
Doesn't give up.
Like, you know, just one more day. You know, throw it for, you know, to have the hearings. We need more people to stand up and contest. And, you know, because they had other opinion. Their other motivation was that they wanted to get these state legislators mm-hmm. that were on the fence before to send or to change the electors for Biden, you know, for Trump. And they tried this in Michigan and other places. But overall, I mean, what do you think that the people are? What's going to happen with these 70 million people that voted for Trump, and many of them feel like the election is stolen? Are they just going to accept what's going to happen on Inauguration Day and go away? And or is this going to? Are we looking at some radicalized elements now that will continue to divide this country? Ali,
I think this is. This is going to be a huge challenge, not only for Biden and his administration. It's going to be a problem for American society going forward. How do you deal with Trumpism? Mm-hmm. I don't think, and maybe that's just me being optimistic, that all 70 million of the people who voted for Trump subscribe to these conspiracy theories and are prone to mob violence and are all white supremacists. I don't believe in that one bit.
Neither do I, by the way.
Yeah, I agree.
There are a lot of suburban people who were told that Biden is going to raise their taxes. They're like voted for Trump. There are a lot of sort of Americans who have party loyalty and who are going to vote for the Republican candidate no matter what. But even if we dwindle that number to, you know, 10 million, that is still a massive societal challenge that you have. Mm-hmm. 10 millions who don't believe that the president is legitimate and who could be driven to violence, who have white supremacist tendencies. And I think the biggest responsibility to calm down these people and to bring back some civility to the discourse will be on the Republican Party and on Republican-leaning media outlets. We've seen some, you know, slightly encouraging signs. Trump, when the blade has reached his beard, I'm translating word for word an Arabic saying.
Even though he has no beard.
Yes. When he was feeling the heat that he may be in legal trouble, especially if there's a paper trail linking him to the planning of the attack, he put out a message saying, "I denounce violence. This is not us. We're not going to do this." Kevin McCarthy, the Republican leader in the House, who, by the way, sent an amicus brief to the Texas lawsuit challenging the election results, along with 129 Republicans, is sort of taking a step back and saying Trump is responsible for the riots and we can't do this and this is not us. Even Mitch McConnell, who will be, you know, the most senior Republican after Trump is unseated, is saying that he's, at least privately, saying that he's open to convicting Trump post-inauguration in a Senate trial.
But so, Ali, sorry to interrupt, but he never conceded. He never recognized that Biden won. So, and some people...
When he said...
And some people are saying that this...
He did, on the 7th, I think.
And he never said, "I lost. Biden won."
Oh, well, he said,
"I'm going to
say
who?
I lost."
Trump.
Oh, Trump, yeah. Trump never conceded.
He never conceded. So people are saying already, I mean, if you read like how you read these things and these comments on social media, are already saying that he was forced and this is a fake tape. Like how they did remember one time with Obama, they wanted to show how you can use technology and digital technology in order to show a president talking, but it's not him.
Oh, that's a new conspiracy?
Yes, this was not his real statement? Yeah.
I mean, the no, I don't believe the video was a fake tape.
Of course not.
I think he was told, that's my theory, and I'm just talking not based on information, just total speculation. I think his legal people, his legal team told him, "President Trump, you are in trouble. You could go to jail and you need to start acting now." And this is sort of part of his preemptive defense strategy to say, "Look, I denounced the riots. I said I'm calling for calm." But nevertheless, whatever his motivations are, I'm just saying that this is good. It's a good thing that this is happening. To calm the tensions a little bit, to tone down this anger, you know, Samar and Ahmed, the anger I witnessed, crazy, crazy stuff, just screaming and yelling and, you know, screaming for a revolution and saying there is treason going on. So if there is a way to diffuse those tensions so people don't get hurt, that would be great. And the Republicans are like the number one party that's responsible for this process of diffusing tensions and calming down the anger. But the number two party would be the right-wing media. Mm-hmm. Fox News, Newsmax, Breitbart, you know, because these are the outlets that drove people angry. These are the outlets, I don't like to use the word radicalized per se, but if we are to use it in the same context that they use it in a counterterrorism way. These are the outlets that radicalize Trump supporters, and the de-radicalization process must start now, or people will get hurt.
But those outlets have no interest in doing it. In fact, I heard that some of these rioters that were storming the Capitol were denouncing Fox News, that they betrayed them, and even Fox News is not good enough anymore. And these things are actually seeping. They're not just happening to people there. I mean, I'm coming across, they're not many, some Arab Americans, Arab people, that are actually pro-Trump but are buying these conspiracies, and some Muslims,
but in
very
the Arab
few,
world or here?
Here in America, and they're posting about this. It's like one thing to see, you know, white supremacists, but if you're in like an Arab guy, and you now have internalized something where you're pro-Trump and you're like speaking the language. There's one guy, you know, that he's actually, it's almost like, what's that woman? Candace Owens. She's African-American, but pro-Trump. You have some Arab guys that are pro-Trump, and they're getting so many followers, white supremacists or like pro-Trump followers and supporters. Go. Well, the only reason they're agreeing with you is because you're, you know, like a self-hating Arab or something. You're pro-Trump. But the question I want to ask you is, because you also cover, you know, counterterrorism and the war on terror, and you're familiar with that, and we're familiar with that ever since 9/11, all the scrutiny on the radicalization of Arabs and Muslims and young Muslims and how they're a potential threat, and the FBI and all the intelligence communities monitoring, you know, and using biased racial profiling of Arab Americans and Muslims as a threat. Meanwhile, for years, these white supremacists are becoming radicalized, and we now see who is the real threat to the United States democracy. They've always pitted people that look like myself or like Samar or other Muslims as the real threat. Meanwhile, the real threat to this country are the people that are anti-democratic. We went out and voted and we accepted the results. When I say we, meaning the Muslim Americans, the Arab Americans. Are you surprised? And do you see the irony in this, that it's like the white supremacists, the people that are waving the flag, that are actually desecrating, the Constitution and not really protecting it?
Mm-hmm. Now, look, the threat of right wing and white supremacist violence has been around for years. Has been around since before Obama took office, and it intensified after Obama took office. Unfortunately, politically, it is not attractive. It's not attractive to talk about. At least it wasn't during the Obama year to focus on it, because it's less politically costly to focus efforts on Arabs and Muslims and, you know, the so-called Islamist terrorism. Now we're talking about it more because we're seeing it, you know, with our own two eyes. But you go back to, for example, 2017, Donald Trump ended funding for a group called Life After Hate. And this case, I don't know why it hasn't been talked about as much, but it's a very telling example of how things went wrong. This group, Life After Hate, is founded by a former white supremacist. And its goal is to de-radicalize people, to move them away from hate, to identify people involved in far-right groups and sort of try to reason with them. They had psychological programs to sort of remove this hatred from people's minds, and used to get government funding for this kind of work. Trump stopped it. If you recall, in 2009... there was a report that came out that right wing conspiracy theories,
right,
and possible violence is on the rise, and many former veterans are involved in this kind of thing, and veterans are especially dangerous because I all love and respect to the troops and people who served our country, and in no way I mean this in a disrespectful way. But if you're a veteran, if you're ex-military, you know how to use guns. So if you get drawn to an extremist ideology, you are especially a danger. And there was such a huge political backlash after that report that at the time, the Department of Homeland Security had to apologize to veteran groups.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't politically convenient for the past maybe 10 years to talk about right-wing extremism that had been on the rise. But now I think that political taboo has been broken because we're seeing it. There's mm-hmm. no denying it. And while in the past it was vandalizing a mosque or killing people at a Sikh temple or killing Muslims in a parking lot or even a synagogue shooting, that far-right terrorism was always seen as against the other. Now it's taking place in the country's headquarters of democracy, in the House of the People. So everybody has woken up to it.
Let's just remind our listeners, they're listening to True Talk on WMNF 88.5 FM. Ahmed and I are talking to Ali Harb, who's a journalist for the Middle East Eye, and he's covering U.S. foreign policy, elections, and Arab American communities. I want to ask you, Ali, have you covered Black Lives Matter? And do you see that there is there are two systems of justice?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Two systems of justice, two systems of law enforcement, two systems of perception of danger. I like to call it the occupation of Washington. In June, Donald Trump ordered thousands of federal officers into the city. We're talking about National Guards, FBI agents. They had officers from the Bureau of Prison, just descend on the city. The city was militarized overnight. They set up a security perimeter on the White House. You couldn't get close by several blocks to the White House. Heavily armed, federal agents from various departments across the streets. And I recall this very vividly. One of the protesters, screamed at the officers, you're wearing all this military stuff and all this gear, but where is the threat? Who's threatening you? And so put that image in one hand, on one side, the federal troops marching and descending on Washington, securitizing the entire city over, a few thousand Black Lives Matter protesters. That's on one side. On the other side, a few Trump supporters stormed the Capitol, and one of them breached the Senate chamber and sat on the Senate president's desk. Another one of them sat on the Speaker of the House's desk and put his feet on it and then took some mail on the way out. It's incredible.
The difference.
It's mind-boggling just having seen it with my own two eyes that this contrast.
The discrepancy. Okay. Like if it was Arabs and Muslims people trying to walk in.
It's the same city, by the way. Like, it's the same
same city, same, like, within the same year.
Apples to oranges.
Go ahead.
Yesterday, I was roaming the city around, talking to people for a story I'm writing, or actually I wrote about the inauguration and the preparations of the inauguration. And I will read you this quote from an activist who's always protesting by the White House. She told me this discrepancy that we spoke about. She said, in its purest form, it is a visual example of how alive and well white supremacy is in this country.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of white supremacists have badges. And let's not... going back full circle, how did this happen? A lot of white supremacists have badges. I bet you a lot of people in the security apparatus, if they were not involved or conspiring in the storming of the Capitol, at least they were sympathetic and turned a blind eye and enabled this to happen.
I want to thank you, Ali Harb, for being on True Talk. Inshallah, we'll talk later next time. Thank you so much, Ali, for being with us.
Thank you, Samar and Ahmed, for having me.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
Take care.
Ahmed, I wanted actually to ask you a very important question. It was a debate and on the social media that some people were upset that they compared what happened to, for instance, January 25. that, you know, this is the people rising because there
is... You mean
is,
the Arab Spring in Egypt?
But in particular, a lot were like, how could you compare the two, or how could you compare this to the Arab Spring?
Yeah, obviously there's no comparison. I mean, one was... the Arab Spring was rising up to topple down an authoritarian regime a dictatorship to fight and bring in, usher in democracy and, you know, the right to self-determination. This one was the other way around. It's like trying to dismantle democracy. But, you know, it's a confluence because a lot of these people see Washington as out of touch. They see these people that are super rich, and of course they're buying. Now, some of it is legitimate grievances, some small stuff, or, you know, I don't want to say small or big, but some of it is legitimate. But definitely the election, whatever grievance they have that somehow Trump won, that is not legit. If they want to fight the system or change the system, they're going to have to do a lot better and look for other ways. But standing with Trump is not the way to do it. The only thing I think they like about Trump is somehow he's an outsider and he's there to just shatter these things. But he is basically part of the swamp. They enriched themselves. I was reading an article that Ivanka and her husband refused to allow the Secret Service that's there to protect them to use one of their six different bathrooms. So they would not allow... they're there to protect them, but they can't use their bathrooms. That the Secret Service had to rent an apartment in the basement of the same building from someone else so they could use the bathroom there at the rate of $3,000 a month.
But that's after they used Obama's garage for it, and then they would drive a mile to Pence's house. And then they rented $3,000.
Oh, I didn't. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but they still paid $100,000
more, I think.
For just Ivanka, for using a toilet because of the Ivanka and Jared Kushner. These guys have cost this country so much. They're not patriotic, but these people are like willing to die to go defend them in the White House.
Let me read some email.
Yeah, somebody sent an email.
Okay, from Jim, he says, rename the White House to President's Residence, which makes, sense. And
Because of, you know.
Yeah, and then there is Tommy, and he says, the people that entered the Capitol illegally were not protesters or terrorists. They are insurrectionists and should be charged as such. And then Mark says, good morning. Your guest sounds so sincere, polite, respectful, and informative. Thank you for having him on. Peace, Mark from Bradenton. So, Ahmed, very interesting times. I never thought in my whole entire absolute life that I will witness something like this.
The storming of the Capitol?
The storming and, like Ali said, the intensity of hate. You know, the intensity, I thought, you know, I've done, you and I, million speaking events, and, you know, there are people who would be asking you with anger, and, like, they were very passionate when they are against Islam or Jihad or Quran or the Arab countries or blaming the Arab people for having dictators, not thinking that we support them. But I never thought I will see this intensity against other Americans, where a police officer was pleading to the humanity of the guy beating him by saying, I have kids, I have kids. You know, that was the only way for him to survive. And he's white like them. And
not only Americans, but white Americans. You know, they're going after Pence. They're going after Pelosi. But again, I see it as a failure of law enforcement, and law enforcement needs to be held accountable. The intelligence community that they have allowed
so much money figuring out what we're cooking.
The New York, spying program on Muslims. They've been spying on Muslims and Arabs
What's
for so long.
What's the name of that program that the FBI wanted, even you when you were working a long time ago, to like for us to be all informants, but in a nice way.
Yeah, but I didn't agree to that.
Of course, you
or
did not.
Anyone. Yeah, just to inform on each other and spy on each other. But meanwhile, these groups have been, you know, growing and growing and becoming stronger. And they knew that something is going to happen on the Capitol, and they failed. So where is the accountability in all of this? But again, it seems like they had some sympathetic people. But now, I just mentioned, just for those that didn't hear earlier, that the FBI had put out in a bulletin that synagogues and mosques are potentially targets by some of these extremists. So please be careful this weekend, especially during your Friday Jumu'ah prayer and your Shabbat on Saturdays, and also churches, so especially African-American churches. So be careful, stay safe, wear your mask, and stay vigilant. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, this is WMNF Tampa, and NPR News should be coming next in like a few seconds.
In a lot of seconds?